Thanks for joining us, and welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Here at Stonebridge, our goal is to lead people into a real, healthy, and growing relationship with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to join us live, we hold services every Sunday at 9:30 and 11:05 a.m. at 1 Stonebridge Church Drive in the Woodlands, Texas. We invite you to check out our website at gostonebridge.com and follow us on Twitter, where our handle is at SBChurch, and give us a like on Facebook at facebook.com/gostonebridge. This week, Pastor Steve Bradley continues to teach from his new series, Yet Equally Annoying. Here's Pastor Steve.
Because, you know, love is so important, and love is a powerful thing, and we know that especially relationships really matter to most of us, really, really matter to us. But at the same time, if you're honest, if you take an honest look at relationships, there are some things in all relationships that are pretty annoying, right? Yeah, they are, and that's part of real life. In fact, I will go ahead and tell you, it's one of the things that I love about the Bible and the stories in the Bible is it's not like a fairy tale. It's not like, you know, here's only the good part or here everything works perfectly like this. It deals with the reality of life and the things that even in the most important relationships are pretty annoying to us. In fact, I put, there are a lot of love songs written, and most love songs have, you know, kind of a flowery, ushy-gushy. But then there are also these love songs that talk about love in a very realistic way. And I put one in for your title this morning that's The Righteous Brothers. And it goes like this, starts out like this. You probably know this when it goes. You never close your eyes anymore when I kiss your lips. Y'all know this one? Sing with me if you know. And there's no tenderness like before in your fingertips. If y'all don't know this, oh, I feel sorry. Man. You're trying hard not to show it. But baby, baby, I know it. You've lost that love and fear. Anybody got a lighter? Whoa, that love and feeling. You've lost that love and feeling. Now it's gone, gone, gone. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Yo, y'all are good, man. I'm telling you. Now, here's, you're like, I know, why in the world do we listen to songs like that? Why would we, you know, why would we like songs like that? It's gone. It's a bad thing, you know. And here's why. Because it's the reality of it. We struggle. It's difficult for us. Almost every person, when you hear that song, which is why it sells so well, says, I can relate, right? You can relate to something like that because love is, for so many people, love is this feeling, this thing that they fall into, and then somehow down the road, they're like, but how do I make it work? How do I keep it working? And that's part of the dilemma and part of the work and part of the struggle of every single person is to try to make it work. Whether you're married, not married, never been married, could be married, you know, it's still, we all in here, we have this feeling of, yeah, but can this work? In fact, I want to just kind of rehearse or go back to what we went through, talking about can love be, you know, stable, steady? Can it last? Can it be true? We talked about several things. First week, we talked about, here it is, it'll pop up on the screen there, you fill in the blank. There it is. It's more than an emotion. Love, if it's going to work and you're going to keep it and you're going to make it last, love has to become what? Yeah, it has to become an action. It has to become a verb. It has to become something that you have learned to work at and do. It's not just something that you feel. I'm not telling you that love is not a feeling, not an emotion. It is, but it cannot just be an emotion or a feeling and where you just kind of fall in, fall out, and depending on, you know, how everything else is going or what you ate that day, you know, your feelings change. It has to be something more than that. It has to be something that you do. And there was a couple, I don't know if they're here today, but they came when we first started this series. They sent a picture to a friend of mine who sent this picture to me, so I don't even have permission to show you this picture, but because we started this series, this is the picture that they sent. Look at this. And can you see on the tombstone there, the marker? This is a couple, and they have put this on their marker, and I love this. It says, what does it say at the top? Love is an what? Action word. Love is an action word. Would that be a great thing to have on your marker? because they have realized it says something that's very real and very practical, and this is the way it really works. It's not just some ideology, you know, that we're going to deny anything that doesn't fit our ideology. This is the real world, and this is the way it really works. And I think if you look in the Bible, this is the way God approaches things. He's saying, listen, he's okay, God's okay with real life. It's just we are the ones that struggle with it, but he tries to teach us, you know, how to make real life work, and in doing that, how to make love a verb in our life, how to make love something that we do in action, which is so desperately needed. The second week we talked about, what if God made you for love? Now I know you think, say that again, what if God made you for love? Because our tendency is to look at love and say, well, love is something that came about because of a need in our lives and because we needed other people, and you know, as life kind of happened, this need came, and if there is a God, you know, he said, y'all need love, and so I'm going to teach you and kind of add this new thing called love. But if you read the Bible, here's what you actually discover. The Bible doesn't really push toward that. I mean, that's the way we experience it. But the Bible pushes toward this understanding that God, it's 1 John, John said this, God is what? Yeah, God is love. This is the characteristic of God that is the most powerful, that is the most meaningful. It is the one word and the one idea of who God is that not only fits emotion and feeling, but it also fits action and what you do and choices that you make. God is love. And what if God is love before you and I even existed? What if God is love before anything existed? What if God is love before anything was ever created? What if this is who God is and what God is like, and then because of who God is and because of what he is like, that he is love, God decided to create you and me and people, and he decided to do that so that he could demonstrate, so that he could act out, so that he could show the depths and the width and the height and everything about who God is, his love. Totally different concept, isn't it? And if all of a sudden you start looking at your life and you start realizing that God, this is who God is, and God has made me to act this out and to demonstrate this, listen, you will take on an entirely different view of your life. It's not just about, well, I've never made a mistake, or I've never made, this is a learning process. This is something that God is revealing to all the world through us. He made us to do this. You go back to the book of Genesis, as we did the first 2 weeks, and it absolutely fits when you look at mankind being made and God teaching us this is what's important. This is how it's going to work. You were made to function and understand, you know, me and to relate to me, and so you've got to understand this part, really important part. And then number three, which is what we talked about last week, different way of putting it, love is a value statement. Love has to do what you have decided or what you believe is important. Not just important, what you believe is more important than anything else. Love, it's a value statement. It says to the other person, I care about what you feel. Does love involve feelings, emotions? Absolutely it does. Does it involve actions? And it could not exist without it. I care about what you feel. And we talked about Jesus himself coming and living his life as if he was not the most important person in the world, even though he was. That he came down out of heaven, he emptied himself, he abandoned that place in heaven to come down here. Why would he do that? Because God is what? God is, yeah, exactly. He's going to demonstrate, thank you, that he's going to demonstrate to us, see, younger you are, the more you get it. He's going to demonstrate to us. It's a little annoying, isn't it? But it's true. And he's going to demonstrate to us what love is really all about. And the only way for us to really catch it and really understand that God is trying to reveal himself is if he becomes like us. He lowered himself. He emptied himself. He becomes in picture at least, a flawed human being. He wasn't flawed, but in picture, you know, he looked like a flawed human being, and he was even executed as a criminal looking like a really, really, really flawed human being. He wasn't, but he did it so that you and I would understand what love is really all about. And in Philippians, Paul takes this shot great, especially with relationships. I know you say, well, is this written for husbands and wives? Absolutely it was, even though he wasn't specifically referencing them, where he said, listen, this is what Jesus did. You should imitate him. You should be like him. In fact, here's the one verse out of Philippians I want you to hang on to. This is chapter 2, verse 3. Paul wrote, when you do things, do not let selfishness or pride be your guide. I like that. That's from the New Century Version because it rhymes. So that's just me. Don't let selfishness or pride be your guide. And we have a tendency to do that. That's the way we look at life. I'm just going to tell you, that's the way I have the most natural tendency to look at life. What's in it for me? What about me? How does this make me look? And my pride becomes my guide. And my pride means this. I'm most interested more than anything else in impressing you. I am. But what happens is love says, you know what? I'm not as it's not as important to me to impress you. I've decided this is my focus. This person is my focus. He says, so don't let selfishness or pride be your guide. He said, but instead, this is from a different translation, but with humility of mind, regard one another. Say this part with me. Regard one another what? As more important than yourselves. We said as the most important person in the room. That's what Jesus did. And I told you last week, you want to go to a place where you're not the most important person in the room? Go to a wedding, right? You are not the most important person in the room. In fact, the most important person in the room, they wear all white. They have got on, you know, a gown, a dress, a whole outfit, you know, that is just something like you have never seen before. In fact, my wife is here, Joni is here, and when we got married, she had on a gown that had a hoop in it. I didn't know they actually did this, but apparently a long time ago they did. It's made out of metal, and they actually wear it, and the dress goes over it. And so when she came down the aisle, she was 10 feet wide. I mean, she took up the whole aisle. You know why? Because she was the what? The most important person in the room. And if you're the groom, you're just there. That's just the way it works. And it's your job as the groom to make sure that everyone knows that she is the what? The most important person in the room. See, I think that's a good thing to remember because that's what love is. And just to let you know, in the Bible, it uses a bride and a groom, a wedding, as an example, an illustration of Jesus and us, the church, the people. They're called his bride. And Jesus, you know, you would think is supposed to be the most important person in the room. But in the illustration, Jesus is who? Jesus is the who? The groom. He is the groom. Why would Jesus be the groom? The bride is the most important person in the room. Yes, to the groom. The bride is the most important person in the room. That's what love does. That's how love sees it. Love doesn't see it with pride as the guide or self-centeredness as the guide. Love sees it as has this mindset, this is the most important person in the room. And if you want to make love work and you want to make it love grow the way God says you're going to make love grow, the only way that it can grow, you have to adopt that attitude. And that's what he says in Philippians, and he makes it important. So what happens to our love or to our affections? Let me give you three things that happen really quickly for you just to kind of hang on to. You might want to fill in some blank. First of all, we start chasing after competing affections. So, right, you know, you find the person that you love, you get married, you know, you make all these vows, some pretty outrageous claims and all too, and then before long, you start chasing other things. It's just easy to say, okay, that's kind of set, right? That's done, don't have to worry about that anymore, you know, so now I can go after other things. But the problem is, when your love or your affections start changing and going after other things, guess what happened? Your love and your affections changed. And it's a dangerous thing. In fact, it takes you away from the love that you should have. Even in Revelation, great passage in there where God challenges us. He challenged the church. He said, you've lost your first what? Love. You've lost your first love. You left it. That means you went after other things. And he gives the solution to this problem. He says, go back. Go back and do the things that you once did. That means go back and chase what you once chased. You direct your affections. Here's the second thing. We neglect and we take the important affections for granted in our life. It's just neglect. We just sort of say, I've got other things to do. And all of a sudden, the things that we once did, we don't do anymore, and we don't put the same time and energy into it. And you say, well, that's because it changes. It does. But if you want to keep love alive and you want to stay in love and you want to make love something that just doesn't fade away or pass away, you have to consciously and by choice. And everybody falls in this, and everybody has to recover in this and say, whoa, wait a minute. What am I doing? This has to be the most important thing. You don't neglect love. You reinforce it. You put your time into it. And then the third thing is, I call it poor nutrition. And it just means that the love habits in our lives, we neglect those love habits and the things that we once did. And sure, they change over time what you do and what makes it important and what makes it work. But it's just poor nutrition. If you're not feeding on things that make love last and make love work, then you're not going to do very well in those things. Just like physically, if you begin to eat bad, right? If you begin to eat all the things that you shouldn't eat, and listen, let's be honest, we want to go after those things. There's an assumption of that. I'm just like you. Those things are attractive. Those things taste good. But if I go after those things, what happens is then I don't function as well because I'm not focused on the things that make me strong and that make me healthy. So let me take you, this is the book of Proverbs. And I know you think, why would we go to the book of Proverbs? I want a book on love and on romance and relationships. Actually, the guy that wrote most of Proverbs, Solomon, wrote a book on that called The Song of Solomon. We'll do that another day. But and that's really what it is all about. But in this one, Solomon writes a very practical book that certainly affects relationships. It covers all gamuts, and they're kind of like statements that he throws out there saying, listen, this is a wise way to live. If you want to make your life work, if you want to make it last, if you want to find the most important things, and you want those most important things to be the most important things to you, this is the way that you would live, and this is the way that you should approach it. And this is what he says. It's the first chapter, verse 7, which may be kind of the focus or the core of the whole book. He says this. He says, the fear of the Lord is the, say this with me, it is the beginning of what? That means understanding, figuring it out, knowing what's going to work and what's not going to work. And think about it for a minute. It makes perfect sense. If God made you, if God created you the way you are, if God is the one who designed you, and God designed you with a plan and with a purpose, and if God knows how you're going to succeed and how you're going to fail, then the fear of God, that means looking to Him as if He knows it all, He's figured it all out, that would be the most important thing. In fact, that would really be the kind of the core, the beginning part of becoming wise or becoming a person of understanding. And then he goes and says, fools despise wisdom and instruction. Let me give you another paraphrase. This is from Eugene Peterson's paraphrase called The Message. He says it this way. He says, I like this. He says, start with God. The first step in learning is bowing down to God. That means acknowledging, you made me, God. I didn't make myself. And I can try to go a different path and a different way. Really very foolish for me to do that. Because this is the way I was designed. This is the way I was made to work. Whether I like it or not, whether I feel it or not, you're the one who knows how it was designed to work. And he says this, only fools thumb their nose at such wisdom and understanding. Now, let me give you a quick little Hebrew lesson this morning. I know you came for that. So, in the Hebrew, the word here for beginning in verse number 7 is the word, you might want to write this in your outline, is the word reset. Now, if you want to do it the way it would be done in Hebrew, oh, somebody's already tried to change it a little bit. It's R, it has that long line over the E, and then that mark there that is a mark of emphasis in the Hebrew. And then unfortunately, that S-I-T over the I, it's not like that. It's the opposite. So don't make it like that. It's a rooftop. And then underneath the T is another long line. And that's the way they would, in English, would kind of write it so that you would figure it out. But the reason I like this word is because this word sounds like reset, right? And this is the word for beginning. The beginning, if you want to figure things out, the beginning of knowledge, the reset of knowledge, is fear of the Lord. And it's the way that you reset your life, the way you get back on track, the way you figure it out. The word can also mean essence. It's the heart of it. Or in some cases, they would use the word to be like, to mean like a capstone, the thing that kind of punctuated it and make it work. But the whole point is, it means this is the place to start. If you're going to make it work, if you want love to last, if you want love to be more than just that loving feeling that you lost, this is the place to start with God, who He is, why He did it, and to sort of reset it and make it work, you know, based on who God is and what God says about love. Jesus did the same thing. Do you know that? They're asking Jesus about divorce and about why love doesn't last and why it all falls apart. And Jesus, He makes this statement. He says, yeah, but here's the thing. It was not this way in the beginning. And He goes back and He says, so in the beginning, this is the way it was. In other words, Jesus is saying, the thing you have to, if you want to know how this works or figure this all out, you have to go back to, why did God do it this way? What was the point? What was the understanding that God wanted us to have of love itself and relationships themselves? And you can do this. In fact, it's really important that you do this as your marriage, your love relationship, as the years go by. It really is important that you reset, that you go back and you say, listen, we can make this work. It has changed. It's not the same. We're not the same, but we can make this work. So I brought a clip with me from an old movie, Fiddler on the Roof. Anybody watch Fiddler on the Roof? Ever seen that? Well, the movie, maybe the best version ever, was Topol played the part of Tevye, and they get into a song because that's what they do in musicals, you know. Just like you and I, we start singing to one another, right? And his wife is named Golda, or Goldie, and somebody said, oh yeah, I remember her, Goldie Hawn. She was, yeah, that's her, and no, it's not. It's a different Golda, and this is back in, I think they were in Russia in their day, in the whole setting of it, and they're talking about love, and the younger ones figuring out love, and so they get to this idea, what about us and love? So here's a clip from Fiddler on the Roof.
Golda, do you love me?
Do I what?
Do you love me?
Do I love you?
Well?
With our daughters getting married and this trouble in the town, you're upset, you're worn out. Go inside, go lie down. Maybe it's indigestion.
No, Golda, I'm asking you a question. Do you love me?
You're a fool.
I know. But do you love me?
Do I love you?
Well.
For 25 years I've washed your clothes, cooked your meals, cleaned your house, given you children, milked your cow. After 25 years, why talk about love right now?
Golda, the first time I met you was on our wedding day. I was scared.
I was shy.
I was nervous.
So was I.
But my father and my mother said we'd learn to love each other. And now I'm asking, Golda, do you love me?
I'm your wife.
I know. But do you love me?
Do I love him?
Well?
For 25 years I've lived with him, fought with him, starved with him. 25 years my bed is his. If that's not love, what is?
Then you love me.
I suppose suppose I do.
And I suppose I love you too. It doesn't change a thing, but even so, after 25 years, it's nice to know.
Isn't that a great clip? Yeah, it's irritating, isn't it? Love can be that way. I think it was last year, it may have been a little before that, and I have no idea where I got this from or whatever, but my wife, she will confirm this. Out of the blue, I said, "Do you find me attractive?" And she did kind of the same thing. "What? You're a fool. You know, what are you talking about? What?" And I don't know if she ever said yes. I think she said, "Sometimes," you know, so... Yeah, it's a little annoying that love changes, but listen, the truth is what you do is you're finding the depths of love, right? It's not just the attraction of love. We're all attracted to love. We want that feeling. We want, but there's something more to it, and there's something, you know, deeper to it that of what love is that I think it's important that we learn. So here's what I'm going to do. If you go into chapter 4, in Proverbs, this is kind of the reset, how you reset your love habits, which is what you have to do. You say, this is what we're going to do. This is what I'm going to focus on, and I'm going to trust. That's what love does. Love resets its habits, and it trusts that the feelings will follow, that somehow that part will work out. Rather than chasing the feelings, you put your emphasis on the habits, because that's how God designed it. You focus on those, you do those, and you trust that somehow, you know, the feelings, they're going to work their way out. Somehow that will all work out. Here's what he says. This is Proverbs chapter 4. Let me take you through a few verses here real quickly. Verse number 20. He says, "My child, pay attention to what I say. Listen carefully to my words." This is how important it is. Let me have your attention. Listen. I want you to listen to what I say. "Don't lose sight of them. Let them penetrate deep into your heart." That means you've got to really think about the things I'm going to tell you. Contemplate them. You're going to have to chew over them, and you're going to have to change, you know, really your whole approach because of these. And then he adds this in verse 22. I love this. He says, "For they will bring what? Life." They will bring life. Now, that's not just, you know, okay, I know I'm living, but I'm talking about life. They will bring life inside, if you will catch these, to those who find them, and healing to the whole body. Listen, they make us alive inside if you will go after these things and you will chase these things. And then a verse, if you haven't memorized a verse lately, here's a great verse. It's verse number 23, and he says this, "Guard your heart above all else. Guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life." Guard. That means you protect what goes in here, how you see things, how you understand things, what feelings you decide you're going to chase and you're not going to chase. From the Living Bible, paraphrases what it says, "Above all else, guard your," I like this because it's how, for me, more understandable, "guard your affections." What you decide you're going to chase after, and those are important. Guard your affections. And he goes on to say, "For they influence everything else in your life." They do, don't they? Sure they do. Your affections, what you are drawn to, what you go after, but you have to decide that you're going to guard and protect those things, because you realize that if I don't, I'll go chasing after all sorts of things that aren't healthy. They aren't good for me. They won't heal me. They won't make me stronger. They won't give me the life that I'm looking for. Here's four, real quickly. This aren't my words. These are Solomon's words. Here's what he drops down on us. He says in verse 24, he says, "Avoid all perverse talk. Stay away from corrupt speech." I like that translation. Corrupt speech. Speech, good. Speech communicates something. But there is a speech that is corrupted. That means it has gone bad. It will not make you healthier. It will only make you sicker in life. It will hurt you. And he says, you have to avoid this. That means you guard what you listen to. You guard what you read. You guard what conversations you're involved in. You say, it's not that you become a judge of everybody and everything, but you do. You judge whether or not you want that to be a part of your life. I have a good friend, and I remember he would do this, and it impressed me when he was younger. Go into a movie, and all of a sudden something would pop up in the movie that, you know, he decided, nope, don't want to. And even though he may, you know, he may have wanted to see the rest of the movie, and it, you know, sometimes they just throw things in there, he would get up and leave. He'd get up and walk out. He said, I just don't want that going in my eyes or going in my ears. Not going to do it. I'm going to avoid that. And one of the things that I really love is I've been around my son before when he did the same thing. He got up and walked out. Got up on a conversation or something and got up and just walked out because he decided, yeah, it's not really where I want to go. It's not really what I want in life. Here's number two, verse 25. Look straight ahead and fix your eyes on what lies before you. That means what he's saying is, listen, you've got to decide what you want in life. You've got to decide what you're going to go after. If you just live your life and say, whatever comes, you know, just kind of comes, then listen, you're not being very wise. There are things that when you got to the end of your life, what kind of life would you want to live? What kind of life, you know, you'd say, yeah, that's it. Okay, fix your eyes on that then. Say, that's what I'm going to chase. That's what I'm going to go after. That's what I'm going to focus on. And the next one actually applies to this. He says in verse 26, mark out a straight path for your feet and stay on the what? The safe path. That doesn't mean don't take any chances in life and never take. That's not what he's talking about. He's saying if you have set yourself in a direction and you say that's what I'm going to go after, then that's the path that you walk. Because if you don't walk that path, then you're not going to get to where you're going. Every destination has a path that gets there. And every path leads somewhere, right? And so you put the two together and you say, this is how I'm going to live. This is what I'm going to go after. This is what I'm not going to allow because it penetrates the heart and I don't want to corrupt the heart. I'm going to guard my heart, what goes in here, because this is where my heart, my affections, this is where life comes from. This is what motivates me, and this is what moves me in life. And then finally, number 27, he says, don't get what? Sidetracked. Don't let your feet go after what is evil, you know? There is an attraction to things that are evil. There is sometimes something that just lures us away to say, ooh, I wonder if. But he says, don't do that. Don't go after those things. Don't become sidetracked. If you become sidetracked, you lose time and energy moving toward the destination. You are off the path. And unfortunately, sometimes people get sidetracked and they just don't ever seem to reset. They just don't ever seem to find their way back to the path. And I think the reason he's putting this out here is because he's saying to us as we live life, you can reset. You can put yourself back on the path, but this is what you have to do. You have to guard your heart. You have to guard your affections, the things that lure you away, even the things that you say, well, it's harmless, it doesn't matter. If that's your goal, if this is the path that you're going to walk, if you don't want to be sidetracked by things that end up being evil in your life, it is important. It does matter. You have to determine that you're going to walk that path. You know, I did bring the cups back out from last week, and I've told you before that, for me, I met Joni, and man, she was Wonder Woman. She was. I mean, she was just amazing. And for me, she was Superman. That didn't last very long, but I was Superman, you know, for a while. Then I became Stevie Wonder. And but the one reason I brought that out is because if you know the story, you know, when you're young, comic books and all that, if you know the story of Superman, and I think it was in the early movies, Superman had a purpose, he had a plan, he knew why he was here. Did it cost him? Absolutely. He was focused on that, and then at some point, Superman kind of loses his focus. He kind of gets sidetracked. It's the story of King David, Solomon actually had this same thing in his own life. That's why he is able to put these verses out there. Don't get sidetracked, you know, but Superman got sidetracked and he went after other things that ended up being evil in his life. Why? Because it wasn't who he was. It wasn't what he was supposed to do. And he kind of woke up, you know, in the movie and realized, what have I done? I've gone after the wrong thing. Somehow I got distracted. I chased after that. And Superman, he brings back a reset. He says, this is who I am. This is what I should be doing. This is what I was made for. I'm going to go after those things. Listen, the only way that you know this, the only way that you figure this out is you go back to the one who created you. And he says, this is what I made you for. Is it going to be exclusive? Sure it is. You walk a path, you don't walk other paths. You choose a destination, you've eliminated the other destinations. You know, that's what love does. I'm not saying you don't love people, but I'm talking about, you know, in this exclusive love, that's exactly what it is. It must be exclusive. Where you say, this is where I'm headed. I remember an actor when I was a young boy. Came out, made the newspaper, and it was kind of flying in the face of Hollywood and how we think of things. And he said this, I've learned this. He said, the picture of love being strong and powerful is not how many women you can have an affair with. So that's not the picture of love. This is a Hollywood actor. He said, the picture of love that makes it strong is the fact that you can love one person for your whole life. And be faithful to that one person for your whole life. Now, we all struggle. I'm not telling you that I don't. We all do. But there's a chance to reset that God gives to us, that he brings to us. And says, look, reset. Focus again. Decide this is what I'm going to go after. Don't lose track. Don't allow things that people say or things that pop up that would take you off track. Don't let those things invade the heart and corrupt the heart. Protect the heart, guard it above all else, because from here, the heart, your affections, all the issues of life come from this. Let's pray together. And Heavenly Father, we thank you. You understand us. You know us, and nothing concerning us or love has ever deterred you from loving us and caring for us. Your affection for us is just as strong as it ever was. And you proved it by sending your son Jesus into this world, that he would give up his place and his position to become like us, even to become, at least in appearance, as someone who is the worst of the worst like us when he's crucified on a Roman cross. But he does it for love. And he gives himself and he sacrifices himself and he focuses himself and he consecrates himself to a certain path in life, all because that's the power of love. So that we would understand what love was really all about. So that we could focus. And so for so many of us, Lord, so that we could find the reset in life that we're really looking for, the beginning, the place that builds love into our lives. Father, we thank you for what you've shown us, how you care for us, how you stay with us, how you never forsake us. We thank you for your great love. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.